Now the Three Martini Lunch with Greg Corumbus and Jim Garrity.
And welcome, everyone, to the Thursday edition of the Three Martini Lunch, along with Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. And Jim, as promised, thanks to Jim's diligence, we actually have a good martini today. Good martini in the sense that it could help Republicans win. And that is an analysis from Jay Cost over at the Weekly Standard, talking about how, despite all the coverage and speculation about how the Republicans may or may not have a weak presidential field, President Obama's got a tough reelection bid no matter who the nominee is for the most part. President Obama, he says, way overpromised on the stimulus, tried to do it unilaterally, tried to paint himself as the FDR since it was supposedly the worst economic crisis since the Great Depression, but FDR at least incorporated some Republicans, and then he decided to deal with a whole bunch of other stuff other than the economy, most notably Obamacare and some other things that took his eye off the ball. But, of course, every few weeks we once returned with a laser lock on the economy. So basically the thesis here is that the president overpromised, really was scatterbrained all over the place, and ultimately were a whole lot worse off than anybody anticipated that we would be. So that's good news for Republicans heading into this full-fledged campaign year, Jim.
That is absolutely correct, Greg. It's interesting. You reminded me of the phrase, the pivot to the economy, which we saw with this, you know, disturbing regularity over the first 3 years of Obama's presidency. I think he's pivoted so many times. He's become something of a drill, just going further and further down into the ground. If he pivots any further, he'll be in violation of anti-fracking regulations, breaking up the subterranean earth there. Yeah, I was thinking about what has Obama done that people are not upset about, not giving him grief. And I thought about those trade deals he signed earlier this year. And that was designed to improve the economy. I know there are some listeners out there who are very pro-free trade, and a lot of folks who believe that it ends up being it hurts a lot of American workers. I think you can make the argument that it's a net benefit. But on the other hand, if your job ends up going overseas because there's labor that's willing to work cheaper out there, that can be very economically painful to go through. And you know, you probably feel like your whole life has been turned upside down. So it's not surprising that people have a certain wariness about it. Ironically, people don't seem to be giving Obama much grief over it. And for all the flaws of Republicans, no one seems to be giving the Republicans much about it. And the answer is that when something is bipartisan, it doesn't leave anybody the voters any place to steer their blame. So if Obama wanted to avoid the mess that he was in now, it really would have been worth it to get more than token support of the stimulus of the Maine sisters and Arlen Specter back in 2009, who remained a Republican for weeks and weeks before, you know, after that vote. It would have been worthwhile to get Republican votes on Obamacare. If he'd thrown in tort reform, maybe he would have gotten a few more Republicans to jump on board. You can argue whether that would have been the case. But by passing so many pieces of his agenda on a strictly party line basis, he can't say, well, what do you expect? There was we put together our best minds. We all tried our best. And, you know, this was an effort in which we tried to take everybody's best ideas and get it to work. No, no. The blame goes directly on Obama. And in fact, in one of his speeches, he said, give it to me. Now, I think he said that because he thought the economy would be in recovery shortly thereafter. And, this is during the days of recovery summer, and it's not there. Jay Cost looked at some economic numbers and basically, look, there's some indications of some slight improvement. But people know people know what the last decade was like, and they know what things have been like for the past 3 years. And they know that this is not a good economy. At best, this is a less bad economy. And maybe on its very best days, this is a mediocre economy. So, you know, Obama's slogan in 2012 might as well be, isn't mediocrity wonderful? And that's not quite what he was running on in 2008.
Oh, but it's not his fault, Jim. Rich people and corporations.
ATMs, corporate jets, headwinds.
Anyway, the president got a little bit more bad news, and it's actually bad news for all of us here on Thursday. And that is the downward revision once again of the third quarter gross domestic product. The initial statement was economic growth of 2.5% from July through September. Then that was revised downward initially to 2.0%. Now it's down to 1.8%. And for those who are decent at fractions, that's more than a quarter of the original growth that we saw back at the end of the third quarter. And so it looks like demand has not jumped up as people initially thought, given the more solid numbers. It looks like the numbers from the second quarter actually were a little bit lower than we initially thought. So it's still positive growth, and I guess that's a good thing compared to where we were. But based on what the projections were, once again, from this administration, and others about where we ought to be this long after the financial crisis of 2008 and the subsequent mass layoffs. Not so good, Jim.
Now, we will have to see what the total annual growth rate turns out to be. But it's worth noting that the Obama administration believed that growth was going to be 3% this year. 3% is more than 2.5%, which was that initial quarterly estimate. It's more than the revised figure of 2.0, and it's more than the revised figure of 1.8%. So we are not meeting that level that they had put in their budget and that they thought, well, as long as we make this level of economic growth, the deficit won't be so bad because the tax revenues will be coming in and the economy will be humming along. Not happening. I'll have to look back and see what the total year looks like, but it doesn't look like we're going to hit that 3.5% level. And remember, as of next year, we're supposed to have 4% growth for the next 5 years, I believe. That was the projection of the Obama administration. The economy was going to hop back up to I think most people would say about a 3% growth rate is pretty good or average or something. And once you get to the 4 or 5, you're doing pretty darn well. And you know, 6, 7, 8, you're the economy is really, going gangbusters. Well, we're at 1.8. That's not a recession. That's not total stagnation, but that's barely growing at all. That's certainly not going to do much of a dent in the unemployment number. It's certainly not going to create any sense of prosperity or American dreams coming true. And I think this is just, we will hear more spin from the administration about how it's really not that bad, but really, let's face it, we're bouncing along the bottom. This is miserable. And as much as, kind of relating to our first martini, I think I'd prefer my country to be doing better and for the Republicans to have a more challenging road in 2012 than to have these circumstances. Having said that, if we're going to have a bad economy, I'm glad that Obama's getting the blame for it. And so I hope that Obama is held accountable for this the 4-year recession that he is presiding over.
True. But of course, if Republicans don't pass the 2-month extension of the payroll tax, the economy is entirely
their fault. It's the end of the world.
On to martini number 3 now, Jim. And Ron Paul, as we mentioned earlier in the week, according to a couple of surveys, is now leading in Iowa. The latest Rasmussen survey suggests that Mitt Romney's actually in the lead. But one of the things that you get, as Herman Cain and Newt Gingrich have found out, that once you're at the top of the heap in the polls, you get a little more scrutiny. And one of the things that has been dug up as potential trouble for Ron Paul, these newsletters that carried his name right on top of them back in the 80s and 90s. And apparently there was some rather, let's just say, insensitive things, perhaps on the racial front, on the Semitic front. And he's been asked about this over the past couple of days. And CNN's Gloria Borger decided to ask him about it again. And here's kind of an extended excerpt from that.
Is it legitimate? I mean, is it a legitimate question to ask that something went out under your name?
And when you get the answer, it's legitimate that you sort of take the answers I give. You know what? The answer is I didn't write them. I didn't read them at the time, and I disavow them. That is the answer.
Well, it's just a question. I mean, it's legitimate. It's legitimate. These things are pretty incendiary.
Because of people like you.
No. Come on. Some of the stuff was very incendiary. And, saying that in 1993, the Israelis were responsible for the bombing of the World Trade Center, that kind of stuff. So,
goodbye. So, Jim, I sort of have a mixed reaction to all this. As an interviewer, I love watching politicians squirm, which he certainly was in this position. It's a topic he didn't want to talk about and certainly didn't want to talk about any further. On the other hand, Gloria Borger's handling of it seemed a little bit rocky, to say the least. He did give an answer, even though it wasn't a very thorough answer. And I think she and others want a whole lot more, given the content that was in these newsletters for an extended period of time. The idea that he didn't know for a long time what was in these things stretches the imagination a little bit. But in the end, I don't think either one of them came away looking all that great.
A better follow-up might have been, well, according to your tax returns, you made $1 million from these newsletters in 1995 and probably $7 million over the course of their existence. So considering how much, vile, racially incendiary rhetoric and smears and just vile stuff that was in this, do you feel guilty about making a couple $1 million off racist newsletters? And oh, by the way, when it was called the Ron Paul newsletter, did it ever cross your mind that you might want to read what was going on under your name? I mean, I think that's a perfectly fair question. Now, Greg, as you know, I don't read The Morning Jolt. Of course I do. I mean, I'm baffled by this. And I think this is a very creepy chapter of Ron Paul's life. His explanation doesn't totally make sense because there are interviews in which he touts it. He talks about it. And the idea, if there was a Greg Corumbus newsletter, I just have this feeling you would read it. And the first time somebody had said, and there was, I'm going to heavily paraphrase this because it's ugly stuff, but basically The insinuation was that African Americans are predisposed towards crime, that they're, you know, you get the gist from stuff like that.
Right.
If that sort of stuff is going out under your name, don't you think you'd be a little bothered by that? Don't you think you'd be, you know, I mean, he says he's denounced it or renounced it. I you know, it's just kind of baffling that this can go on for several years. It's baffling that he kind of says he's never read it, and at the same time he's kind of touting it at the time. It's the whole thing just kind of, it's a weird, creepy thing. And the fact that he, you know, is willing to storm off the set. Hey, look, you know, Ron Paul, you wanted more attention. All right. You are now, you know, in some polls, the front runner in Iowa. Welcome to the front runner status. These things are going to get scrutiny. And Herman Cain sat in that exact same chair in CNN and got asked a whole bunch of uncomfortable questions about his alleged harassment and alleged affairs by Wolf Blitzer. And Herman Cain sat there and took it like a man. Okay. I mean, it's one of those things where I suppose I can see the circumstances in which I might storm off the things. But look, I mean, you know, if Gloria Borger intimidates you, you can hear her. She was kind of chuckling and trying to be, I think, you know, ask very difficult questions in the friendliest way possible. And we can argue about whether that was really the right tone for those questions. But at some point, he needs to give a really full, detailed explanation, because he's never even said who wrote them. Now, there's been a lot of speculation about who wrote them. But considering the enormous damage that could be done by having a Republican nominee who sent out a newsletter under his name with a horribly vile, you know, race. I mean, think about the brouhaha over Rick Perry's rock. You know, I mean, if you don't think this is a legitimate issue or this wouldn't be a major issue, running against the first African-American president of the United States, you don't think this would get blown up into a huge issue? I'm kind of baffled at the Ron Paul folks, how blindsided he seems by this. And then how indignant he seems that he thinks that anyone could have an issue with this. And, you know, look, I know he'd love to sit and talk about the gold standard, the Federal Reserve, and all kinds of other issues. And I'm saying we shouldn't talk about those kinds of issues. But sometimes there's going to be stuff in a candidate's past that it's going to have to get asked about. And look, suck it up. Welcome to the front runner status. If you don't want to answer these kinds of questions, don't run for president, for Pete's sake. Anyone who has any, you know, problems with that, any Ron Paul fans out there listening, my name is Greg Corumbus, and you can reach me at...
Yeah, I think maybe Ron Paul's watched a few too many episodes of Law & Order, so the asked and answered thing may work... In the courtroom there, but not so much when you're involved in a months-long campaign for president. Just brings on more questions. So we'll see how much of an issue this becomes over the next several days. But right now, he's looking pretty strong in some of the polls, at least in Iowa. Jim, have a great day, and we'll talk to you tomorrow when we begin our end-of-the-year awards McLaughlin style.
Looking forward to it, Greg.
Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. And as we just mentioned, starting tomorrow and through all of next week, we will be bringing you our end-of-the-year awards from everything from best newcomer to person who's heading to oblivion, best idea, worst idea politically of 2011. And we'll wrap it all up at the end of next week with our person of the year, turncoat of the year, and our political New Year's resolution. So please be sure to tune in for all of that. Again, for Jim Garrity, I'm Greg Corumbus. Please join us tomorrow for the next 3 Martini Lunch.